For the fourth Sunday in a row now, the assigned lectionary epistle lesson is from the book of James. This begins in the second part of the third chapter. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and you do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly, in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. Submit yourself, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. Well, for those of you who have been attending worship over the past 3 weeks, or even just last Sunday, for instance, you may be especially glad to know that today we come to the end of a month-long sermon series from the no-nonsense book of James. James, not one to mince words, has written a very blunt letter, but he offers practical guidance for ethical living. And his words of wisdom are useful to those of us who are trying to live a way of life that has been modeled by Jesus. And here's a brief recap. From the first chapter of James comes the following valuable instruction. Let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Rid yourselves of all sordidness and rank growth of wickedness. Well, then comes a summary statement of sorts of his entire premise on how to live a life as a follower of Jesus. Be doers of the word, and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. And from the second chapter, James, we learn that there are certain behaviors and attitudes that are incompatible with the Christian faith. And one of those behaviors is showing partiality and favoritism, especially toward those whom we think can do us special favors in return. We're called, therefore, to a life marked by non-discrimination, because playing favorites has the potential to lead us to break Jesus' commandment to love our neighbors, to love all our neighbors. And the other behavior, inconsistent with wise and faithful living, is being indifferent to those in need, such as telling persons that we will simply pray for them instead of actually doing something to help them in some concrete way. And in the book of James, the issue of Christian faith involves not just what we believe about our relationship with God and others, but also what we do with what we believe. So in perhaps his most memorable pronouncement, James declares, faith without works is dead. Now last Sunday, reading from the third chapter of James, we heard his scathing assessment of the damage that can be done by the words that come out of our mouths. And in our day and age, we should also add the words that we put down in print. Being especially cautious of knee-jerk responses in emails and text messages. But while James concedes that the tongue cannot be tamed, we still have a responsibility to at least try and control it at all times. So with that review, we come to today, the second half of the third chapter of James, and the beginning of the fourth, and then full circle with James' understanding of how to live a wise and faithful life. In addition to putting our faith into action by treating all people equally and watching what we say, James adds the warning of what will happen with our lives if we become dominated by envy and selfish ambition. James asks, "Who is wise and understanding among you?" He proceeds to provide the answer. Those who show that they are living a good life by works done with gentleness, born of wisdom. He counters this wise approach to life with one that is dominated by bitter envy and by selfish ambition, which lead, he says, to bragging and boasting, disorder and conflict. For who among us, in all honesty, hasn't experienced what it's like to be envious of someone else, or to covet what someone else has? It may be envying someone else's talent, or intelligence, or sense of humor, or relationships, or good looks, or their job. Maybe coveting somebody else's financial well-being, their car, their house, their clothes, etc. So James asks, those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? And again, he answers his own question. Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. Well, here's something that may help in that regard. There's a commentary on that old lament that we're all familiar with, that life is greener on the other side of the hill. The comment is that there is no other side of the hill. And yet we continue to yearn for and focus on what we do not have, rather than to simply be grateful for the things and the people we do have and are a part of our lives. Well, then, in a difficult and often misinterpreted passage, James states, "You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly, to spend it on your pleasures." While it's a good idea to question our motivation for asking for certain things in prayer, the word pleasures in this context does not refer to our simple desires or things that we care deeply about, but rather it can best be described as those things that we selfishly desire for our own self-gratification, and perhaps worse, our own self-promotion. James reminds and instructs us that envy, jealousy, selfish ambition, and self-gratification are not marks of living wisely. Today's passage closes with verses that are also difficult. It says, "Submit yourself, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and the devil will flee from you. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you." Though the word submit is decidedly out of favor in our day and age, and rightfully so, we are nonetheless challenged to explore what it would mean for you and for me, for us as a congregation, to submit ourselves to God. Interesting, the answer to that question comes in part with the admonition to resist the devil. Now, without getting into a long and theological discussion about what the devil is or is not, I think we can at least agree that in part it can be anything that leads us away from God or tempts us to not follow the ways of God. So this begs the question, what would it take for you to resist those things that lead us away from God? James follows this statement to resist the devil with a parallel to draw near to God. I don't think, however, that James had the intention of this being a simple cause and effect kind of statement, that if we draw near to God, then only then will God draw near to us. Because I profoundly believe that God, and therefore God's grace, is always near to us. Yet is it not often the case that we do not experience or connect with that nearness and grace of God until we make an effort to draw near to experience God? By humbling ourselves and being receptive to God's grace, we are much more likely, I believe, to experience and connect with God's sacred presence. As we've discussed through our study of Celtic Christianity, a sacred presence that dwells within and is a part of all things. So just as important as asking you to think about what it would mean for you to resist the devil, think about what it means in your life and what it would take for you to draw near to God. What would that look like for you? For our congregation, our presbytery, our denomination, whatever. You know, is there anything that you and I can do, either individually or together, to help make that happen? Well, in reference to that, you may want to pick up a copy of the sermon series I did this summer called Connecting with God. It provides, from a Celtic perspective, many ways of different understandings of what it means to connect with God. And it also helps to remember that the path to spiritual transformation is a continuing process. We turn away from God, but we turn back toward God. We turn away from wise and ethical living, but we turn back to the ways of Jesus. And back and forth, time and time again. So as we seek to draw near to God and continue to grow in faith and discipleship, remember and apply the wisdom that is shared throughout the book of James. I'll provide you a little list. Pray for wisdom. Listen as much or more than you speak. Put your faith into action. Live your life in a way that does not discriminate against others or become indifferent to the needs of others. Speak only words that are helpful for building others up. Resist that which tears yourself and others down and pulls you away from godly living. Especially resist envy, selfish ambition, and resentment that can lead to disputes and conflict. Finally, do whatever works for you to draw near to God. And remember that there is mutuality in this entire process. It is more than just our efforts to draw near to God. It is also understanding that God is always drawing near to you and to us. And so we have come full circle, learning invaluable and practical lessons from James that can be of help to us in living a life that is marked by wisdom, to quote our own John Calvin, that comes from knowing God and from knowing ourselves. Live wisely.